You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Karen Chatton from Gardnerville, Nevada, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 10th, episode 3901. Good morning, Horse World.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Endurance episode. We're here the second Tuesday of every month for the last, 13 years. And Karen, it's good to talk to you again. Now, I have to congratulate you because I saw you got a new puppy.
I did get a new puppy, a little red heeler. He was found running down a major highway February 23rd, and nobody claimed him. So after the holding period, they neutered him and they put him up for adoption. And the next morning, I was at their door waiting for when they opened. And he was still there. And so I took him home and we named him Brick. Not just because he's red, but because he is built like a
brick. Oh, he looks like a little tank.
He's a little tank. Yeah. He's a little guy and he's 38 pounds. So I did order the Embark DNA test on him. The shelter sent that as you get a discount on it. And then part of the money goes back to them, to the shelter.
Oh, that's cool.
And so, yeah, I adopted him. He's been wonderful. He's super smart. The first day he had the dog door figured out, and we've been real careful with getting him in and out. No accident so far. I've given him plenty of chew toys and cow ears and bully sticks and things. And so he's only been chewing on the stuff he's supposed to. So that's been kind of fun. But we have not had a puppy. I gave my husband a puppy for our 10th wedding anniversary, and we're almost going on 38 years.
Oh, wow.
So
it's been
a while since we've had a puppy. We've mostly adopted the rescue dogs that are a year or two or even 6 years old. So it's a relearning experience for all of us.
That's why we always went for the greyhounds, because when they're out for adoption, they're usually two or three or four, right?
Yeah.
So you're past the chew the house apart stage.
We hope so. Yes. He's 7 months old. So, but he's still very mature and very smart, which sometimes being very smart isn't always the best.
Say that's good and bad.
It's good and bad.
That's always been your type of dog. That was the heeler type.
Yeah, I like the heelers and the cattle dogs. So we lost our oldest one. She was right around 16 years old, the month before.
Yeah.
And this, it's almost like it was meant to be. It's like she sent this dog our way and he does all the same things she did.
Oh, wow.
Like these heelers, they're known for being Velcro dogs. So this puppy, he watches our every move. He follows us. If I go out to the barn, I'm not letting him go with me yet unless he's on a leash, just till we know and he knows what to expect. So I go out and do my barn chores or whatever I do. And when I come back, he is sitting right there at the back gate waiting for me.
Well, and I know you like bringing your dogs on your rides when you go out by yourself. And so that's perfect for you, right? You need a dog that's not going to take off and not come
run
back.
Off. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, it's exciting.
Yay,
having a puppy again. Thank you.
And then I noticed also that Jovi's put on some miles this year.
Yes, we've already got 100 miles under our belt for this ride season. We did the Fire Mountain ride 2 days, 100 miles total back in January. And then I was kind of giving him a break. I took him out this weekend and he was literally, bouncing off the walls full of himself. So, that's what happens when you have a fit horse. Yes. And then you give them a break.
Again, they're positives and negatives.
I know there is. So we're getting legged up because we do have another 50 coming up in another couple of weeks. So we're doing that. I've got my little gray horse, Saint. He's only 14 hands. And I've been ponying him out off of my quad. So he's been learning how to do that. And I've got him up to like doing as much as 17 miles. And he's doing great. He's learning how to not get himself run over. So, you know, it's kind of fun. And then you probably remember the Anglo-Arab gelding that I had, Apollo, the big white horse. Mm-hmm. I sold him, and that family has now gone in a different direction. So they contacted me saying they were possibly considering selling him. So I let my friend know that had ridden him with me for a couple of years, and she purchased him back. And so he's coming back home in another couple of weeks. So he's going to be staying here for a little while. And so that's kind of exciting. So she'll be riding again with me on Apollo, and now Apollo will belong to her. So it's kind of fun.
You have a statistic in here because Joby's going to reach, 1,000 miles, or has reached 1,000 miles?
He has reached 1,000 miles.
You said something 96% or more of horses never reach 1,000 miles that do endurance?
Except most horses never reach that. So just because a lot of people dabble around, I think, and they just do a ride or two, or they... Getting to that first 1,000 miles to me has always been a big milestone, because at that point, once you've done 1,000 miles, you know, the horse is going to be pretty much considered broke and sound.
And it's probably going to be 100-mile horses, so you're going to do a longer races at that point.
Right. Yeah. So you're going to start doing the longer, more difficult type of challenges, or, you know, for a lot of us, when we start out, that's one of our goals, is to do something like Tevis or Old Dominion or the Biltmore. You know, people want to reach that milestone of doing 100, or even doing the multi-days where you do more than one day in a row. And so most horses don't ever, you know, reach or achieve that. And it's not always the horse that doesn't want to do it. Sometimes it is just the rider doesn't want to do it. And, you know, like I've been, you know, discussing with some of my friends, like, where is our cutoff point for being able to afford this sport? I know I have cut back. I'm not wanting to travel and spend as much money as I used to do, traveling as much, because prices, you know, my last ride, diesel was $5.29 a gallon.
Did they have the annual meeting for endurance?
Yes, we did. They did. We had the virtual convention that they
How'd
did
that
online.
Go?
I think it went really well. We're waiting to hear, you know, we don't really know the numbers yet of how many attendees.
But they didn't have any tech problems, or it seemed to go off.
You know, I think it seemed to go off pretty well. You know, and people can still go and sign up for a month afterwards and still follow or join in on all of the lectures and stuff for all the educational topics that were covered. But they did announce all of the national awards, like Hall of Fame horse, Hall of Fame rider, partners, and there's also a trail volunteer award. So let's go through let's start with Hall of Fame horse for 2025 was Sundown Reveille, which was ridden by Claire Godwin. And she's been on the show, I think, at least once, if not twice. And she also received the Partners Award for PL Mercury, which I know we spoke with her. He did the Tevis when he was like 27 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then for the Hall of Fame person, this year it was Hall of Fame persons. And that award went to Joyce and Dennis Souza. And they have been longtime, very devoted riders, anytime you're at a ride, you will see them doing everything to help out. In addition to riding, Joyce also has had a horse in the Hall of Fame. And so their whole family chips in and helps with ride management and volunteering and riding. And so this year, all of the award winners have been people involved in the sport, very dedicated people. So congratulations to them. Okay. And then we also have the volunteer award, and that one went to Monica Chapman. And so congratulations to her. And thank you all for all you've done to help contribute to the sport of endurance.
And of course, we just had last weekend, I live near Gothy Forest, which is about 2 miles away. And that's where they do some of their long endurance rides here. And they just had one right here, actually.
They did.
Yeah. So that, I think there was a pretty good turnout, too, from what I was able to tell.
I think so. But yeah. I did hear that because it was so hot that they, that it was very challenging.
It was hot. We went from winter. We actually had winter here in Florida. It was getting down into the 20s at night, which is unusual. And then we went to 90s in the next week, you know. So we,
oh my
there was
God.
No spring here in Florida. It went from
I know my horses aren't even shedding yet, and we're expected in the next like 10 days to be 20 degrees above normal.
I think everywhere in the country went from winter to, well, let's skip spring and go right to summer. we're clipping over the weekend because these horses are 2 inches of hair yet, and it's 90s this week.
Same here.
Yeah.
So that leads me into my endurance tip.
Yes. And this has been one that was popular years ago. We talked, many years ago. So I'm glad you're doing it again.
Yes. So I'm going to talk about Sweetwater. And that's just the name. It's been coined for literally decades. This isn't something I invented. This was something long going before 30 years ago. So it's a popular thing. It's a great way to keep your horse hydrated, get them hydrated in preparation for travel or doing a competition, or like we were talking about the change of weather, and you know, the horses have their winter coats and now all of a sudden it's warm. So
and I'll put I'll put this recipe in the show notes so everybody can have it.
Okay.
Okay.
So what we start with is the base is usually you want stabilized rice bran.
Okay.
And I usually take 2 to 4 cups, or most of the time, like if you've got your standard scoop that holds about 4 pounds, I usually use about half a scoop of that. And then 1 to 2 ounces of either salt or electrolytes. And this is where you can kind of experiment a little bit and see what your horse prefers. And then anywhere from 2 to about 4.5 gallons of water, depends on the size of bucket you've got. I usually use like a 5 or 6 gallon bucket and fill it about 3/4 to most of the way full, but not quite. You know, put in your rice bran. You can use any kind of complete feed or other type of feed. Just experiment, see what your horse likes. The stabilized rice bran is nearly always a winner. The horses seem to like it. It adds just enough flavor. And then the salt or electrolytes that you mix in, stir it up, let it dissolve. Keep stirring it some more. Sometimes it takes a couple minutes for everything to kind of dissolve, and then keep stirring it up. What I do with my horses is as they drink it down, I keep adding more water and a little more salt or the electrolytes to it, and then keep stirring it up. And once the horses start drinking that, it actually encourages them to want to drink more water. So you want to always offer more plain, just regular straight water in addition to this. And you will have your horses drinking and peeing like crazy. And this helps get them hydrated. I'll do this the night before I'm going to travel. And of course, the night before an endurance ride, during the endurance ride, and offering it afterwards. And it really goes a long way to help them just get really well hydrated and to stay hydrated.
All right. And as I said, we'll put that in the show notes. You can just scroll right over there on your phone and we'll have it for you, the whole Karen recipe.
And next up, we have Kristen from the Distance Depot. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We know this is the time of year where there can be lots of inclement weather, one extreme or the other. So today we're going to be talking about some of the ways to protect yourself when the weather changes and all of a sudden it goes from bright blue skies to torrential rain. So tell us what you've got for us today.
Right. Okay. Well, we do have some good waterproof gear for when you're riding or doing chores. The Muddy Creek rain skirt, it's a riding rain skirt. However, you can still do chores in it. They say you could go hiking in it. I don't know about hiking in it, but it's pretty big. And it when you have it on, it has a elastic waistband and a Velcro closure. So it's really comfortable. You can put it on over your breeches or your jeans, whatever you're wearing. And it fully covers your saddle, your legs, all the way down to your ankles. So, and it's warm. It is breathable and waterproof, as I say. So a nice option to keep yourself dry while you're in the saddle.
I know a lot of people who show, not endurance, wear these over their breeches just to keep their breeches clean.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. It helps with that too. It's great for that. Then we have the Muddy Creek short raincoat and the long raincoat. The short raincoat is like your regular everyday raincoat. Waterproof, sealed seams. These are great raincoats. I struggled when I competed 25 years ago to find something waterproof. These jackets are the bomb, without a doubt.
And they're long range. Because a lot of time you get waterproof and then you sweat to death.
Yeah, no, they're breathable. Okay. So that they have that on their side because, yes, they do get super hot. But the fact that the material is breathable and waterproof is just really nice, just to help keep you from being that sticky, soggy mess under your raincoat. I think they're great raincoats. The long raincoat by Muddy Creek is huge. It covers your horse's rump, your saddle, everything all the way down the front of your saddle, all the way back to your horse's tail and down to your ankles. So this is not a raincoat to do chores in or to, go about town. It's definitely made to keep you dry and comfortable while in the saddle. Keeps your horse's rump warm and dry too.
This kind of looks like a slicker, right?
It does. Yeah. It looks like those old oilskin raincoats, but super nice. It has nice flaps, and they're so much lighter than those really heavy. There goes my phone. Sorry.
That means you're doing business. That's good.
That's right. Doing business in the background. But yeah, what was I saying? Shoot. Oh, big flaps, and it's so much lighter than that oilskin raincoat.
The oilskins were like 300 pounds.
And they didn't breathe.
So heavy.
Yeah.
No, they did not. No.
We were given some when we moved to Florida, and they molded in like 3 days,
Oh, gosh.
I know. And to keep your feet dry, we have the Ariat Terrain boots. They're waterproof, and they come in men's and women's sizes. For the women, I have black and brown, and the men, I just have the copper. But it's super nice for doing chores as well as riding. Can hop off your horse and do your trot out, and it has a heel, so you don't need to have a cage on your stirrup unless you want one. So it's a nice boot to keep your feet dry. And the last one is the Outback Packaroo Duster that we have. That is a really long raincoat, and you could wear that about town. And the nice feature on it is super lightweight, obviously waterproof and breathable, but it folds into its own little backpack. So easily stored somewhere in your camper, doesn't take up all that room. So that's a pretty nifty feature of that too. And I think that about covers it. We do have some rain sheets, waterproof rain sheets for your horse too. So we have your horse covered as well.
Oh, good. So how would somebody get in touch with you?
They can visit us at www.thedistancedepot.com. And I'm going to throw one more thing in there this month for your listeners. Just so they know, we have a Garmin sale going on until the end of March. $100 off the Garmin 265 and 965 Forerunners. Ooh. So great time to purchase one of those if you're looking for a new heart rate monitor watch.
Just in time for the new ride season to get underway.
That's right.
Perfect
That's
timing.
Right.
Well, thank you, Kristen. Our next guest this morning is Julie Biddick, fresh back from the Gaucho Derby. Julie was one of a select group of international riders chosen to compete in the 2026 Gaucho Derby, which took place in February of 2026. This event is put on by the Equestrianists, the same group behind the famous Mongol Derby, and it is billed as the greatest test of horsemanship on earth. We did speak with Julie back in January about her preparations for going on this event, and now she is back to tell us all about it. So welcome this morning, Julie. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And so can you give us a description of the Gaucho Derby?
Yeah, so I'd probably call the Gaucho Derby, it's kind of, you know, they bill it like this greatest horse race or toughest horse race, especially in Patagonia. I think I would call it a horse race, but it's mixed with this outdoor survival component and navigational adventure. It's definitely designed to push people to find their breaking point. And then, you know, after 10 days of bushwhacking across this harsh Patagonia landscape, guaranteed, I can tell you firsthand that you will lose at least one dress size.
And not in the good way.
Oh, geez. Okay, so it is 310 miles. So describe the event. Like, where does it start? How far do you ride each day? And tell us about the horses.
Yeah, so it starts, we flew into El Calafate, and then from there, they bused us. Gosh, I think we were probably on that bus about 8 hours. Oof. To where the starting point was. And then there at that starting point, we spent a few days doing their training. So everything from like the outdoor survival stuff, the navigation stuff, giving us a chance to ride a couple of the horses and just get in the groove, medical. I mean, they just kind of threw all of that at us in those 3 days. And then from there, that's where we started. And then they say 500 kilometers, but I think that's kind of as the crow flies. What you're not taking into account is you're going up and down mountains and hills, and you're going to have to go around stuff. And sometimes you don't do it the way you thought you would. And then there's backtracking. So I didn't actually keep track of the miles when I did this. I bet some people did, but I didn't. So I'm just going to go with, I bet we were closer to like 370 to 400 miles, maybe.
If you take all of that into account. Navigating, is that right? You do your own navigating?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's not like an endurance where it's marked.
No. Yeah, it's not marked. So that's why I would say in the description, like, you're bushwhacking, because for most of it, you really are. You're just like, okay, I think this route is going to get me there the best. And I got, after a couple days in, because I spent a lot of time before it ever started, we would have the waypoints and I'd sit there and be like, okay, I think this is the route I'd want. And I would add in additional waypoints. After a couple of days of that, I realized you're actually just better off. Like, there's the waypoint they give you. Just go read the terrain. I mean, there's a couple of times you need to be smart and say, okay, like, this looks like it's going to be the only path to get off of this plateau and down off this cliff. So you do need to have some waypoints in there, but in the end, it just works so much better when I just started reading the terrain and just taking it as it came. That flowed really good for me. But anyways, yeah, so as far as I think how far we went each day, that depended on the day. Some days were way faster than others. All of our cases, some horses are faster than others. So, you know, I bet I was doing probably between 40 and 50-ish miles each day, roughly. And I'm sorry, I think there was a lot to that. What am I missing? I'm sure I'm missing something.
How often did you change horses?
Yeah, so just about every day. So I think each horse I ended up getting to spend one evening with. So I had a couple days of riding. But that roughly turns out to every day I did get to pull a new horse. And in the end, they give you 8 new horses throughout. There's 8 different vet checks. I ended up drawing 10, one because one horse I eventually turned back just wasn't right to deal with, and sound like the other rider that pulled her didn't deal with her either. So that gave me an extra horse there when I turned her back. And then I had one area where kind of had a wipeout out on trail just due to the terrain. The horse ended up being totally vet it out, totally fine. But I just felt like it was in her best interest and abundance of caution to get her turned back in and get a fresh horse. So in the end, I had 10 horses total.
And are they, the Mongol horses are known for being very, very, very naughty. What are these horses like? Are they bigger than the Mongol horses?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, so I would say a huge percentage of these horses are great. They're all going to have a little bit different quirks, but you know, everyone there is a horse person and really good at that piece of it. So I think it was easy for people to read that up front and just figure out those quirks really, really quick. I know for me that wasn't an issue. And I think that's true for most of the riders there. I only drew one horse where I was like, yeah, absolutely not. This isn't going to end well. You could just tell you it's not something you're just going to work through and you're probably going to get yourself hurt really bad. And I eventually, it took a little bit, you know, it's not that easy just to say, nope, no, thank you. I don't like this horse I drew. You have to really show that you've tried. And in my case, that meant I did actually swing a leg over. It didn't last long. And I ended up hitting the dirt and she stepped right on top of me and I'm fine. Everything was totally fine. But I was like, yeah, nope. I really needed to be a better advocate for myself and for my horse. You know, I think that's a life lesson and one I already knew, but I just needed to be reminded of that.
So tell us, what's the Patagonia terrain and what was the weather like?
So the weather ended up being really good. I had probably too good of gear for the weather we were faced. Now, with that said, if we had been facing rain every day, I would have been so grateful for that good gear that I brought. But I stayed plenty warm. The wind is brutal. It doesn't stop. I think there was a couple of times, and it didn't last long, where the wind actually stopped. And it just makes you so, so grateful in that moment. You just take a pause. I'm like, wow, appreciate the fact that there's no wind for this, like, 2 seconds of life. It was really great when that happened. So the wind is brutal. It really does zap it out of your skin. And just, yeah. So that piece is no joke when they talk about the epic winds down there. We only had one big storm that hit. And that one, it happened to be the big mountain day where I think that was the highest elevations we ever did in that particular race. And I remember sitting at the highest elevation point, which I think was getting close to 9,000 feet roughly. And I could look across the valley and you see these storms. So it's bluebird skies above us, but you could see the storm cloud coming and it looked like this wall of water way across the valley. I just remember thinking like, okay, we got to lose this elevation as quickly as we can. So kind of taking a lesson out of Tevis, we trotted everywhere we could. We never stopped moving forward and was super lucky by the time that storm hit us is when actually got down off of that elevation and back into vet check. And then that's when the worst of the storm hit. So got very, very lucky on the one truly bad storm day. Didn't have to be up on the mountain facing it, where I talked to some of the other riders that their timing was such that they ended up getting kind of stuck up at that high elevation. And they said the visibility was basically zero and it was just pretty brutal to have to wait out that storm.
Well, and you know, never want to be the tallest person on the mountain in a lightning storm, right? So, I mean,
no, that's true.
It's never a good idea. Wow. So did you sleep outside every night, a tent or just camp? How'd sleeping arrangements work?
Yeah. So I slept outside every night except for one. And this story is pretty cool. Well, I think this was day three and I was riding, I rode half of the race with Linda and Alana and this was day three.
How many were there? How many riders?
Oh, so there ended up being 40. There were 42 originally, but two of them ended up, I don't know why, but two of them ended up needing to go home prior to the race ever starting. So we technically actually started with 40 riders.
And then you were sleeping, you're just telling us how you were sleeping.
Yeah. So slept outside in a tent every night, except for this one night where try to make the story a little bit short. So the organizer had given us a couple of waypoints last minute that we had to hit onto our next vet check that we're going to. And in the end, us that were riding kind of up in the front at that time, couldn't find those waypoints, couldn't get there safely. So eventually, you know, after a couple hours of trying this, the organizers called it off, said, you know, forget it, don't do these waypoints. So at that time, we really didn't, you have to stop riding at 6 o'clock. And so we barely had enough time to get back off of that mountain and try to find somewhere to go that had water. And it just didn't have a lot of water in that particular area. And so the three of us realized we're really close to vet check 8. And we know all the vet checks, one of the criteria is they have water there. And so we're like, well, let's just go over there. We're a day earlier for that check, but let's just go over there. They're going to have water. What we didn't realize is this was actually somebody's home. And so the Estancia owner came out and met us, and he actually spoke very good English, which is not always the case, but he spoke English, and he's like, you girls are lost. So we explained like, yeah, and we're out of ride time. And like, is it possible to stay here? And instantly, I mean, this is kind of the gaucho way. I mean, the folks, the culture in Patagonia is just absolutely incredible. He's like, absolutely. He's like, here's this pasture for your horses so they can eat and have a restful night. And he's like, I will get the hot water on for a shower. He's like, here's this building you can put your sleeping bags in, so we didn't have to set up our tents. And then we joined him and his family for dinner. I mean, so it just ended up being this incredible experience that, you know, I don't know if anyone ever in the history of doing the Gaucho Derby has ever had the chance to have a hot shower in the middle of this race. But yeah, the three of us were feeling pretty lucky.
That's terrific. And are there any like bears or wild animals going to eat you at night? Is there any warnings? I don't know what Patagonia has.
Nah, they have mountain lions, which I didn't even so much as see a mountain lion track out there. Mm. I think they do have a lot of mountain lions, but I also don't think that's anything.
They're not usually into humans or horses.
No, no, yeah. We're pretty safe. Yeah.
So what was the best part of the whole adventure for you?
You know, I would probably say, and this is something, you know, you hear it, or I have heard this said over and over time, and I probably even used it at times, like, oh, this just feeds my soul. Always kind of would say that sounds a bit like a Hallmark card, but I think for the first time, I kind of understand what that means. So, you know, during this whole, I was out there 9 days, and I honestly never got hungry. My body never felt sore, even after getting stepped on by a horse. I was black and blue, but I didn't even feel it. Like every morning I woke up, I wasn't tired. I mean, I wasn't even tired going to bed. I just felt wonderful out there. And it wasn't until after the race was done, my husband met me there at the finish line. And that night we went and we had dinner. And I ate like to feed a small army. And then a couple hours after dinner, we were actually for bed. I'm like, I am starving. So we left and went to the restaurant and had a whole other dinner that I ate like a huge steak. And then that night I slept over 12 hours. And then the next morning when I woke up, I like hobbled for 2 days. I was like sore and hobbling. I know. And I'm like, it finally hit me. And it took a few days for me to clue in. I'm like, that's what they mean when they say it feeds your soul, because I absolutely felt wonderful the whole time during the race.
Okay. Well, then I have to ask the follow-up question to that is, what was the worst part?
I'd say the worst part was it was day 7, and I kind of thought to me that the hardest challenge would be the horses. And in the end, that wasn't it at all. That was just really just super fun and enjoyable kind of figuring each one out. It ended up being kind of in the scheme of the whole race, this tiny little section. It would be like a little blip on the radar, but it was a pretty brutal section. There was a lot of thick brush in there, and there was washouts and boulders and bogs. And that's where I ended up getting the ground kind of gave way there. And so I just pulled the horse out of there. Just, you know, she looked good to me. I wasn't actually worried there was anything catastrophic, but it was a bad enough horse wreck. I just didn't want to continue up the mountain. So we got out of there. And then, of course, I found a famous bog and managed to get ourselves properly stuck in that and got us out of that.
So, I mean, it was just... Did you find quicksand?
Well,
all that thing you hear about growing up that we're all going to die in quicksand. And then I've never seen quicksand in my entire life.
Well, I think to me, I've never had to deal with, I've dealt with bogs here in Montana, but we don't have quicksand, but there are rock bogs and we hit that, but we didn't hit anything really bad. That was earlier on in the race.
Okay.
That might be the closest to quicksand. This is a true bog. It's just nasty mud. And where we went down, I actually crossed there. And we just had crossed it. And then I realized in this section, this particular trail I was following, was like a little cattle trail. It had been washed out. And I was like, well, I'm not feeling comfortable asking her to slide down this washout. So I turned around. I purposely walked us through where her tracks were, because I'm like, okay, we made it through there safely. Well, I guess once you go through it, you must disturb it enough, because when we went back through following our exact route, it just swallowed her up to kind of where the saddle was. And so I was able to get the saddle off. She took about a 2-minute power nap. I didn't think she was going to help me at all. I was sitting there like, what am I going to do? My horse isn't even trying to get out of this. Well, it's because she's smart. She took a 2-minute power nap, and then she's like, just get out of my way and let me get out of this thing. It was so she got up out of that. And then it made me, I was already nervous about bogs, but it made me even more. I just, you know, was just so cautious about bogs. And, you know, because we can, I would, anytime a bog, I would be off the horse. But I can cross it, you know, there's about 1,000-pound difference between me and the horse. So yeah, it's not always as intuitive as you think of which bogs you can cross and which bogs you can't. So that was also, I'd say, a big challenge moment, is trying to read that the best you can and just keep you and the horse safe out there. But yeah, that particular day, and like I said, it's just a blip on the radar, but that proved to be kind of my breaking point and the most challenging point. And but ultimately, we got it all worked out, and I had to go back to that section again with a fresh horse. But we found a route. I took the time. I actually pathed 3 routes through there. And the first 2 I picked, the horse said, absolutely not. She was not going to follow me. She thought I was an idiot. And the 3rd route, she agreed with me. So I said, okay, that's good. The route we're going to go. She had a very big say in which direction we went through that section. So
looking back, is there anything you'd change or do differently if we were going to do this again?
No, I think, you know, I kind of hit on this a little bit earlier. I do think it's something that riders need to just really pay attention to, and that is, nobody's going to be the bigger advocate for you and your horse than you, and just kind of keep that in the forefront at all times. You know, you might try to get pushed in some things, whether it be a difference in opinion in which route to take and which section to go in, or maybe it's somebody that's not wanting to let you turn back a horse when you know that is the right decision. So I think that's just a really good piece of advice. And I wouldn't have this massive bruise I have if I would have held true to that piece of advice through this whole adventure. So that's the one thing I would have done different at that particular moment in time.
That's interesting, because long distance hikers have a saying, hike your own hike. And basically you're saying, ride your own ride.
All right. Absolutely. Yep.
And so tell us about this massive bruise.
It's just a bruise. I mean,
it's just a bruise.
It's just a bruise. Well, you know, I just, you know, you don't fall the way you should. Like when I was in my teens and 20s, I would be nimble enough. I'd fall and roll and do all the things properly. But I fell, I probably looked like a turtle stuck on its back out there. I mean, there was nothing graceful the way that I fell off this horse. And I kind of got underneath her as she was bucking. And I actually could see the underneath of her hind foot. And I was like, she has very beautiful feet, by
the
way.
That's never good.
And I just couldn't move fast enough. And so she landed right on top of my pubic bone. And it just a split second, I was like, wow. Like, I can't believe I'm not hurt. Like, I was not hurt at all. But I was also very, very grateful for that I didn't end up breaking something out there. So I caught her, and we weren't too far away from that horse station where I pulled her number from. So I hand walked her back and I said, okay,
I've
tried a couple times
please.
Now. Here's my 3rd time. We gotta turn this horse back in.
Jeez. So what advice would you give another rider going next year? If you could give them some advice, what would it be?
Ride your own ride. Just trust in yourself that way. I would say, you know, just remember, it's actually, once you're there, it's no longer about you. And I guess what I mean by that is, like, every day where we draw a new horse, they would prepare food. So this is one example of what I mean. And so this is kind of the time for the gauchos, whether it's their mothers, wives, sister-in-laws, I mean, whoever, their family. This is kind of their time to shine and do something that's part of this epic race. And so they would prepare these meals, and they were great. The food there is fantastic. And so I'd say, don't get so caught up in trying to be competitive that you don't take the moment to appreciate that and thank them for that. Because, you know, that does take away when a rider wouldn't stop and do that. I think that takes away from them. So do it. Even if you're not hungry, just take a minute and go do that and appreciate that. And then just keep that gratitude. You know, it's just pretty epic to even have a chance. Like, what goes into organize this So there's, I don't even know, there was 500 horses. I do know that. I don't know how many instancias they had to pull from to get all those horses together. And then to make these routes that are challenging, but are also going to allow us to come home in one piece. You know, so just be grateful that, and these are all private land. So it's not like you're out there on public land. This is all private land. Nobody except for these gauchos are ever going to see this land. So absolutely, even when things aren't going right, just take a moment to look around and find the things that you are grateful for and just keep focusing on that.
Would you do something like this again?
I would.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have to, we'd have to edit this out so my husband doesn't hear that. But
I need to have him on the horse husbands episode. I need to have him on the horse. See what he thinks.
Oh, yeah. And he has some great stories himself. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, when asked that the day afterwards, I said, no, I don't think so. I'm so incredibly grateful that I did it. And it's just going to last me a lifetime. And then, you know, true to form, once you spend a few days and you start to heal up and you start to process everything, and I'm like, heck yeah, I absolutely would go back. They, once you complete it successfully, because there's so many people that want to do it and they're just not enough spots. So I don't think there's ever going to be a chance where any of us that completed it could go back. But sure, you know, if they ever said, hey, let's do it again with all the finishers, I'd throw my name in the hat.
Okay, so one other question. And on the Mongol Derby, which we've covered for years, fermented mare's milk has become the talk of all the riders at one point or another. Is there any version of that down there?
No, I've been to Mongolia. I've had fermented. It's like, no, there's nothing quite that crazy and unique, especially, I mean, I have my diet consists of a lot of meat too. So I think if you,
well, then you did well in Patagonia.
I did very well in Patagonia. The one thing that I ate, and that's pretty much all they had down there, especially with the stancias and stuff, and that's lamb. So I ate an incredible amount of lamb, and that's something in the US I don't like, but down there, their lamb and how, and maybe how they cook or whatever, it's a lot, it's not as gamey. It's not as sheep taste. It's kind of a stronger taste, or the couple of times I've had it before in life anyways. And down there, it's a lot lighter of a taste. So in the end, the food was fantastic, even though pretty much all I was eating is sheep. And I had some ganaka, which is like their wild llama that are down there, and you could see those everywhere. And that was really good meat too. But no, I felt that the food really was fantastic, and it was so fun because they prepare it over these open fires. So every estancia you went to, you could see where they have this open fire, and that's how they're making their big pots of stew. And so it just was an incredible, special, you know, time to just sit there and sit down with the gauchos and have meals with them. That was really great.
I kind of feel for an American, the Patagonia food would be more palatable than the Mongolian food.
I think so.
And you were hungry, so you were gonna eat anything at that point, so there's that too. Well, how did you place? That you finished, so how did it all come out at the end?
So I placed right smack dab in the middle. I was riding up towards the front. There was a group of us, well, three of us that kind of were there. We were riding our own ride, but it just worked for the first 5 days where we could be together, and we formed a really nice friendship. They're just wonderful, wonderful folks, everyone I got a ride with. And then I had that bit of a horse, the one that I got bucked off. So I said goodbye to them. I'm like, let me go sort this out. You guys keep going, keep going forward. And so I never did catch up with them again. But after that, and then after my horse wreck a couple days after that, which I spent a full day kind of getting off the mountain, getting her taken care of, and then grabbing a fresh horse and then moving back on the race. So that put me way behind towards the back of the pack. And then I had 2 days left, and those days went incredibly well. Like, the navigation just felt spot on. My next horse after that, he was my quirkiest horse, but totally safe, totally fine. We had a wonderful time. It was just me and the horses out there for those couple of days. So we ended up actually making back up a ton of time that I had lost, and ultimately landed right smack in the middle.
Well, I think did we know the finish rate on this one?
Yes. So this is the first time, and I know this because the Interpret Medics is the medical group that supplies like the helicopter and four or five doctors, I think, were on staff. Anyways, they made a post. This is the first time in the history of the Derbies that they never had a major medical evacuation.
Oh, wow.
So 100% made it to the finish line. And of those, only a couple, a few, I don't remember exactly, but not very many, only a couple were in the adventure class. So that meant a massive amount compared to any of the years prior, actually fully finished this race in the competitive category, which is fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even for the Mobile Derby, that's amazing. I mean,
yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That also probably, I think they're getting better at their selections too, because they want that, right? They want that completion rate. So I know we're going to talk to Eric here in a few weeks. And
oh, good.
I know that's one of the things he said to us in the past is that they're trying to get better at that too. Because they know, you know, they know that they need to keep doing this. And if people are dying, that doesn't help. Right. So
no. Yeah. Yeah. It's good if people can come home all in one piece. You know, you can be bruised and broken a little, but you still need to basically be in one piece.
And do you think the weather played a part in that, that you had said you had relatively good weather?
Well, I know the Gaucho Derby, the one that happened prior to this one, so that was 2 years ago, they had really good weather as well, but their results weren't as good. It'll be interesting to see what Eric says. I don't know the horses prior, but I know the stories and I know several competitors prior. I think they did a much better job selecting horses. It's not that, you know, out of 500 horses, there were some that shouldn't be in there still. However, those were percentage-wise very, very small. So my guess is you had better horse partners overall. I do know that they had to change up the race course, so perhaps that's part of it. I mean, there was still some really crazy sections in there, but you know, perhaps that made it where it was a little easier test for some of us. I don't know for sure. It'd be interesting to see his thoughts on that. And then, yeah, I know he did talk about rider selection. And I'll say this, you know, getting to know, because we spent several days in camp, so you get to know everyone. And then throughout the ride, especially up at my first 5 days until it started getting to where I spent a couple days by myself, which was also wonderful. But those 5 days and the people I was riding with and just watching them and their horsemanship skills. And not only that, but just that same level of competence of navigation and dealing with the terrain and dealing with the weather. I mean, that was a really great group of riders. I think every single one of them was very, very competent and brought some great skill set to it. So I bet that played a big piece of it.
Well, Julie, congratulations. Well done. Good job.
Thank you.
Yay. So thank exciting. Yeah, there are some, you know, we talk about type B fun. I think you had type C fun. Is actually
it's its whole other category. Yeah, yeah.
That's a whole new world.
Definitely.
Julie, can you also send us do you have a picture of you out there that you can send us to
I
use?
I do.
Yeah. Can just text it to the number I called John. That'd be great.
Okay. I'd gladly do that.
Julie, thanks a bunch. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Julie.
Thanks for having me.
And congrats. Okay. So now there are lots of rides all over the country. We are into the 2026 ride season. So to learn more about rides or the clinics, the educational clinics that we have, go to aerc.org.
And you can find Karen. Where can they go to find more information about you?
Just my name, KarenChatton.com or NV Endurance Rider.
All right. Very good. And of course, Jamie and I will be back tomorrow with some weird news. Get your weird news into weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com. And you can follow this show, this episode separately. We have a feed for the endurance episodes called Endurance Rider. So if you just search for Endurance Rider on your podcast player, that'll bring up just the endurance episodes and not all the Horses in the Morning episodes. So if you wanted to do that, you could do that as well. Well, Karen, until next month.
Thank you, Glenn. Have a good day, everybody, and wear your helmets and be safe out there.